This morning we are in chapter 5 of Revelation, and chapter 5 and chapter 4 go along just completely together. I mean, John was taken up to heaven like we saw last week, and so we're talking about the things of heaven and the things that John saw within his vision. Now remember, he's having a vision. So some of these things are going to be symbolic. Some of these things are, you know, you can have five people look at the same scene and they see different things. Well, we may see things differently too if we look at this. So let's start with verse 1. And I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a book written inside and on the back. Mine says a book, but it's a scroll, sealed up with seven seals. So I want to get to, you've seen in different illustrations a scroll, right? I mean, you know, it's got a handle on both sides, and they would put it down on the, or still do, the Jews still read in the temple, they read off of a scroll that's handwritten. And so you would turn it, you know, one way or the other, and I don't really remember which one, and they would be in like 3-inch columns right here. And so you would open it up to the part that you want to read. It's in a 3-inch column. The most that I have seen is that they would make these 30 feet long. I don't think you can lift it any more than that, but it's 30 feet long, so they're big and huge. If you've ever been to a Jewish ceremony, when they come out, they've got a cover that goes over the Torah. And so they've got a covering, and the priest brings them out like this. He puts them in his hands, he crosses his hands over, holds it close to his chest, and walks it up, sets it down, pulls the cover off the top of it, lays it down on the podium, and then starts unrolling to the part that he wants to go to the part he wants to read. So they have a scroll. God has a scroll in his right hand. So we're still in heaven. We're looking at this, and the focus has been on all the things he sees around God and all the creatures and the angels. But we're in heaven, and so John is in awe of being in heaven and seeing all these things. But all of a sudden, if you could zoom in like I do with the camera lens, he zooms in and sees God, and he sees the scroll in his hand. So, and I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne, which is God the Father, a book written, a scroll. I'm sorry, sometimes my Bible doesn't correspond with what I've been studying. So, a scroll written inside and on the back, sealed up with seven seals. And I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the book and to break its seals?" And no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the book or to look into it. Now, why is that?
You've got to have the power. It's for the Son. I find it interesting, too, that in the right hand, or God's power hand, which represents his power, is the book with the seals. And over in chapter 1, the seven stars were also in his right hand. So there's some significance there. What was the seven stars represented? The seven churches, which is one church. So we got seven seals with one message. And this gives evidence to me that this is for earth, because the sealing is part of our salvation, as it says in Ephesians chapter 1 and Ephesians 4. If you're not, you've got to be sealed. It goes along with believing. Goes along with redemption. So this, to me, is for the church, which is still here.
Well, I want to ask you about one thing. When you just said the seven stars in his right hand, at that point it was Jesus, because he was seeing Jesus. So it wasn't God the Father, it was Jesus with the seven stars. So that's a little bit different. You're right on the seals, and we're going to talk about those here in a second, because this whole thing is about the seals. And I began to... Okay, so no one is worthy except, and the reason no one is worthy is no created being is worthy to carry out God's plan. I mean, what he has, which we're going to find out here in a few minutes. I know the suspense is killing you, right? Y'all didn't read ahead or anything. Okay, so what he's holding in his right hand is basically how the rest of history is going to unfold. How God has written from the beginning to the end of time. And this is the revealing or the revelation of what is going to happen in this end time period. So no one is able to carry out that except for God himself. Well, God the Son, because God is God. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna look at a lot of imagery as far as the lion and the lamb and how he is worthy and why he is worthy. So let's continue on here. And I began to weep greatly because no one was found worthy to open the book or to look into it. Now he's weeping because he's been told he's going to heaven to reveal all these things to him. And if nobody can open the book, then he's not going to find out how it ends. He was promised to find out all these things, all these mysteries, and he's weeping. And here's the other reason he's weeping. We live in a fallen world. Okay? Pain, sickness, darkness, terror, violence, all these things. When this is revealed and the new heaven and the new earth come, this earth falls away. All the sickness, all the pain, all the sadness, all this will go away, and it will be under God's control. And we will have a world that He originally intended when He created the world before the fall of man. Okay? We're going to go back to a time when that He had always wanted it to be, where it's idyllic. You're living in the Garden of Eden or whatever. And so John realizes the suffering will continue. I mean, from where he is without knowing, he hadn't read through to Revelation yet because it hadn't been revealed to him yet. But he realizes that the world we live in right now can be bad at times. And so he's crying also for the sin, all the things that people have to go through. Questions, comments?
Just one little thing. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you or Philip or anybody saw this in any of your commentary. And I don't really know what to make of it, but one that I read, this referring to the scroll being written on front and back, mm-hmm. was saying that they didn't normally do that because the way the papyrus was woven, the front, the fibers ran like horizontally, like you would write. So it was real easy to write on.
Right.
But when you flipped it over, they were vertical and made it very difficult to write and to do. So they normally, they weren't written on the back.
And it's hard, right.
And so I don't really know, you know, unless this is just something to emphasize how important what all was in there was, that it was written front and back.
And you've got to think, if you take that scroll, you know, the big round pieces here on both sides, and you roll it one way, then it's here, and this is how you would normally read it, with the part that's between the two scrolls. When you flip it over, you don't have that dividing line that blocks everything out. You see what I'm getting at? I thought about this. The other thing with the vertical, some commentators did say that it was written on front and back, but they think that the back was like an index, like we go to an index. And so that would make sense because it would be vertical and you would write across, but you would bring it down. So nobody knows because we hadn't been to heaven, but we'll ask when we get there. So, and there was so much, other ones were so much information that they couldn't put it all on one scroll, but they wanted it on one scroll. There's so much information here, you know, who knows. Verse 6, and I saw, wait a minute. We don't want to miss verse 5. And one of the elders said to me, "Stop weeping. Behold, the lion that is from the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has overcome so as to open the book and its seven seals." Well, now y'all are surprised, right? Okay. And who is the lion of Judah and the root of David?
Jesus.
Oh, y'all are good. Now, the behold, the lion of Judah is obviously a reference back to Genesis when Jacob called Judah. But Judah was not the oldest. Judah was not the favorite. But Judah is the one that Jacob decided was going to be the leader of all this. And, of course, the promise comes through David. And sometimes you'll see in Old Testament, you'll see the root of Jesse or the root of David. Most often the root of David. And so that's a reference to Jesus too. So this is easy, and I'm not going to belabor this too much. But
the king line, yeah.
Exactly, because God had promised that His Messiah would come through the lineage of David.
Yeah. So David was a great king, but Jesus is the great
right.
king.
Right. He, yeah.
So He is the
exactly. Verse 6, and I saw between the throne with the four living creatures and the elders. Now, y'all remember the four living creatures we talked about last week and the 24 elders that sat around there all around in a circle around the throne. And the elders and the lamb standing as if slain. So he's standing, but he looks as if he's been slain, which is kind of strange because if a lamb had been slain, he would be lying down, you know.
It kind of represents Christ crucified.
It totally represents Christ crucified. And you're going to see the Lamb throughout Revelation. And when they say Lamb, which is we're going to get into words again, mm-hmm. it's literal Lamb.
Little Lamb.
Now, you know, if you're going to have let's say a football team like the Detroit Lions. You know, what are we going to be? The little lambs. I mean, does this say ferociousness? No, it doesn't. I mean, little lamb sounds like a nursery school here, Sunday school class or something. All those are just the little lambs. So you're having this power and this glory and this wisdom and all this coming from a little lamb. Well, the symbolism is there because he's the sacrificial lamb who saved the world.
The wisdom of man and the foolishness of God.
You know, yes.
We're going to look, you know, like you were talking about that, you look at countries, you know, the United States is eagle, and Britain is lion, and France
bear.
Is tiger, and Russia is bear.
Yeah.
These are all carnivores, you know, animals want to be fed and hunt and all this kind of stuff. But to say, like, you know, in our wisdom, you know, the foolishness of God, the way man would look at it is a little lamb.
Right.
You know, it's going to be all powerful and king.
And he's looked at it as a rock, too, which is one of the simpler forms in the Bible, which brings down, which is harder than the gold, which is harder than the silver. It destroys all of those things. And he's our stone, he's our rock.
Our foundation.
I think the looking as if he'd been slain, too, is that if you just left it that it was slain, then it is dead. It's
right.
Slain. It's laying there.
Right.
Well, he's, you know, conquered death. He's, you know, he's not dead, so he looks like he's been slain.
Right. And when he came back to Thomas and he said, you know, stick your fingers in the nail holes, he came back to show that he had been crucified. It's the same type of thing. You'd be able to recognize him. And you, one of the commentators said, this is as important to God as Jesus stands before the throne today as that little lamb, as it did the day that it happened when he was slain.
Mm-hmm.
So it still brought up the importance of Jesus dying as a sacrifice for all men, for every tribe, which we're going to read, is still so important at the throne of God that it is just, it's the reverence, it's the worship day in and day out. You know, sometimes we would think, oh yeah, I already know that. Or I've read that, or I did this, or, you know, I went on vacation to the same place over and over again. It kind of gets to be rote. But it's not. I mean, this is really important to God, really important to the creatures, the angels, the 24 elders. This is the center of what heaven is. And I had Spurgeon again, and he said, if you're not liking to worship here on this earth, then you're really not going to like heaven a whole heck of a lot, because that's all we're going to do. We're going to worship Jesus. So if you're having a hard time and say, I don't really like, you know, that whole worship thing's not really for me, you're not going to have a good time in heaven, because that's all it's really going to be about, is worshiping God.
And the slain lamb, too, I think, represents those. That's all most of the world saw Jesus was the death on the cross. Very few was allowed to see the risen Jesus. Just like now, most of the world knows he was crucified, but very few realize he's risen unless he's in you.
Right.
I think the one thing I read too about the little lamb, they were saying that that phrasing or that word in the Hebrew or Greek was only used in Revelation. In the other parts of even Old the New Testament stuff where it refers to the lamb, it's the lamb.
Right.
Only in Revelation is it the little lamb.
Right. Yep.
Did any of your commentators talk about whether, you know, John, as he's seeing having these visions and everything,
mm-hmm.
Do you think John recognized that lamb that was standing
in yes.
the flame of his cross?
Yes, he did. He did totally, because you've got to remember, who was the one disciple that was standing at the cross? Only one.
Mm-hmm.
Who was that?
John.
Standing with Jesus' mother, Mary, at the cross. Only one was there with him during that time. Had gone with him through all these other different things, had been through, recognizes his voice, knows who he is intimate with Jesus. And there were some other examples, and I can't think, I just remember, the cross was so impressive to me, because when everyone else had fled, John was still there. And so John is the one who this vision is revealed to.
Just think about the...
If that didn't give you goosebumps, I don't know what's going on because I got them all over.
Just think of the book of John, how it's written, how much different it is than Matthew,
totally,
and Luke. I mean, it's more than a history lesson.
It's a love. It's a understanding.
He gave something to John that he didn't give to the other ones.
Exactly. We're not going to make it for. I'm almost speed it up just a little bit here. And I saw between the throne with the four living creatures, the elders, the lamb standing as if it was slain, having seven horns, which symbolize power, and seven eyes, which are wisdom or all seeing, omnipresent, omniscient, if I got that right, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. And he came and he took it out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne. And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having each one a harp. Okay, so we've got to stop right there. This is where you get all the angels and with the wings and stuff up in heaven with a harp. That's it. This is where that comes from. So you always remember that. You know, you see the angels with the harp and stuff. That's where this comes from.
Yeah, which is going out again. This is for earth. Notice it said, it is, are the seven spirits of God sent forth into all the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that this is sent to people. These seals are being, so there's a sealing going on by God in the minds of people.
I'm still not totally convinced that he's, when he says sent out into all the earth, that the church hasn't been taken out.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Well, we're going to go back and forth because I'm still not even with that, because those that are left are going to go through the tribulation, but they're going to go through the tribulation. Let's say that theoretically the church was taken out. God is still trying to get the people that are left that go through the tribulation to be His. So.
Okay.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk as we go through. And if you've got ideas, jump in here. But I'm just pointing out that I'm still not totally convinced, but I'm open. And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures, they all fell down with the harp, the golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. You ever think about that? You pray to God for something. Now, they're not saying that when they had this bowl that they were the mediators, the elders were the mediators to God. Don't get this wrong. We don't need a mediator between us and God. But can you imagine God saving your prayers in a golden bowl? And then with fire, I love this part. Because if you pray, and you just say that prayer with no fire, you need that fire of the wanting to be close to God, the wanting to know Him and to be with Him. And that fire symbolically lights those incense, which gives an aroma up to God. This refers back to what was done in the temple with the incense. But the image of your prayers being sent up to God is just really impressive to me. And they sang a new song. This is for our choir members here. They sang a new song saying, "Worthy art thou to take the scroll and to break its seals, for thou was slain and didst purchase God and didst purchase for God with thy blood men from every tribe and tongue and people and nation." So everybody. "And truth has cast hath made them to be a kingdom and priests to our God, and they will reign upon the earth. And I looked, and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne, and the living creatures, and the elders, and the number of them was myriads of myriads and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, 'Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing.'" How many of that? How many things did he just say? Wow. Then some, there's seven again, all completeness. Spiritual completeness. I'm glad y'all picked up on that. "And every created..." I wonder where y'all get all that stuff from. How y'all learn all this? And every created thing, which is in heaven and on earth and under the earth and on the sea and all things in them, I heard saying, "To him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and dominion forever and ever." And the four living creatures kept saying, "Amen." And the elders fell down and worshiped. Do you notice one thing? The angels are not saying thanks for and did purchase for God with thy blood. What did you say in verse 9?
Verse 9.
It says, worthy art thou that take the scroll and break its seals.
Verse 9. And they sung a new song, saying, thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof. For thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by the blood of every kindred, tongue, and people and nation.
Yeah. That's a little bit, mine says it a little bit differently, and I like yours better, because redeemed. Mm. This is a purchase, a redemption. It's like when a slave was a slave, and if I'd been taken off in war, and Lisa had the bucks to come and get me and buy me back, she would redeem me. She would pay the purchase price and redeem me, which is what Jesus did for our sins. He redeemed us for that sin. But you notice that these are the created beings, the elders that are singing this, not the angels, because the angels aren't redeemed. They don't have that need to be redeemed. But they do say, worthy is the Lamb in verse 12, worthy is the Lamb that was slain. And so they recognize all of this, but they don't.
Paul comments on that. I'll be right quick in Ephesians 4:30. Grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby ye are sealed until the day of your redemption. Found that kind of goes with it a little bit. So the redemption and sealing, you got to have both. They're both involved in with redemption, salvation. It's all part one.
Very good. I'm going to bring this up real quick. Let me see if I can find it here, because I was going to actually save it for next week. But through the centuries, commentators suggest many different ideas for what this scroll is and what is written upon it. It's important to remember that whatever was on the scroll, no one except Jesus was worthy to open it. Some think the scroll was the Old Testament and the New Testament together, or fulfilled prophecy. But these ideas look back, not forward. John wrote of things related to things which must take place after this, which is after the time that he's seeing. Additionally, if the scroll was the Old and New Testament, who is unworthy to open that scroll? You all have it open today. See the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Some think the scroll was God's claim of divorce against Israel, but there's no scriptural evidence for this idea. Some think the scroll was God's sentence against the enemies of the church. Perhaps this is true, but only in an indirect sense. But who is unworthy to open that scroll? Some think the scroll was the text of the book of the Revelation or the next few chapters, but this is rather unlikely considering how the idea of the scroll is communicated. And who would be unworthy to open that scroll? Because we now have that scroll open to us. If we want to read through Revelation, you've opened that scroll. Some think the scroll was the title deed to the planet Earth. This is an attractive idea, especially because the coming time of tribulation will end with Jesus ruling the earth, but it's hard to demonstrate this with certainty. It goes on and on. The best solution is to see the scroll as God's will, his final statement of the affairs of the universe. This is based on the idea that customarily under Roman law, wills were sealed with seven seals, each from a witness to the validity of the will. You know how when you sign something down, you've got to have a witness down there? In this time, you had to have seven witnesses. Each one had a signet ring. Each would drop a piece of wax down, they would do the signet ring, and that would seal this and say that I was a witness to this. And so any kind of a will or a testament or anything like that had to be sealed seven times with seven witnesses, and that's what this is alluding to, that this is a legal type document. Roman law required a will to be sealed seven times, as illustrated in the wills left by Augustus and Vespasian for their successors. The book may mean the purposes and designs of God relative to his government of the world and the church, but we whose habitation is in its dust know nothing of such things. We are, however, determined to guess. The seven-sealed book, therefore, is the comprehensive program of God culminating in the second coming of Christ. The book, these are all, the sentences that I'm giving you are all from different commentators. The book of the councils, decrees, and purposes of God related to his church as to what more remarkable things should happen to it to the end of the world, which book was in the hand of the Father. Got a couple more. The idea here is that God has a book in which the history of the universe is already written. He has written the history of the world in advance. He holds it in his hand, the history of the world in advance, and he initiates the commission of all history. Only God can hold the scroll. remember, the emphasis is not on the content of the scroll, but on its seals and the one who is worthy to take it. So this is the initiation of the carrying out of God's will for his planet, for his world, for us, for all of mankind.
So it's sent. It represents a sending. It represents an inheritance. So it's basically sent to those that are in the inheritance. It's what it says. Paul commented on it right here. In whom you also trusted that after you heard the word of truth, the gospel of your salvation, in whom also after that you believed, you were sealed with the Holy Spirit, which is the earnest of our inheritance unto the redemption of the purchased possession unto the praise of his glory. So you got redemption, you got inheritance, and wound in with the seals. So the seals are going to those that are in the inheritance.
Okay. Questions, comments? We're right at 10 o'clock. God bless. Thank y'all.
Thank you.